bring, 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 bring.
Oh, yes, can you hear that phone ringing?
Bring, 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 bring.
Thought the phone didn't work, Yaz. Does that work? Thought the phone didn't work. I must be hearing things. It must be the phone upstairs, Yaz.
I bid you well.
I want to play a game.
Stay on the road. Keep clear of the moors.
Can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with.
Let them see what kind of a person I am. Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Hey folks, my name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And welcome to the Monster Monday podcast. This is the podcast where myself and Yaz talk about horror films every week. And Yaz, why do we talk about horror films?
The monsters in film aren't as scary as the monsters in real life. And that could not be truer this week with the devastating news that has come out of America. And, yeah, this is shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll go to our escapist entertainment whilst also having to acknowledge that there are very real evils in the world that we must... we must advocate against and fight against. Yes.
So whilst the world feels very depressing right now, let's take you on a little escapism journey into the world of Blumhouse.
Yes, and they've got a brand new logo, which I liked at the beginning of this film, or at least a brand new opening animation for the studio. So, yeah, what we're talking about is quite a rare treat. We're going to be talking about a film that's still quite recent. It's playing in theatres in the UK. It's the opening weekend at time of recording, but it's been out in America for a couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, possibly. Who knows?
Because this week we're going to be talking about the new horror thriller crime film, The Black Phone, which is directed by Scott Derrickson and written by Scott Derrickson with his co-writer, frequent collaborator, C. Robert Cargill. And this is the same, or at least a very similar creative team that gave us the film Sinister in 2012, which is...
Oh, yeah, that is a good film.
Still one of the scariest experiences that I've had in a movie theatre. Going in, knowing it was a horror film and knowing absolutely nothing about it.
Oh, really?
Yes, that...
See, I watched it at home, I think, for the first time. And it didn't quite scare me that much. I mean, it's creepy as hell. It's a good film. But, like... I was surprised when you said how scared you were of it.
Oh, yeah. I remember almost leaping out of the seat in the theatre when the lawnmower scene was happening. If you remember, the old, the Super 8 films that Ethan Hawke's character finds in the attic. Yeah, that absolutely freaked me out. But one reason I was keeping an eye on that film at the time was because of C. Robert Cargill's involvement, because he was somebody who I was a fan of at the time, because he was a film critic at Spill.com. He clearly loved his horror films, and he pitched his idea of a film to Scott Derrickson. He watched The Ring, had nightmares consisting of going up into the attic and finding Super 8 films. He pitched that to Scott Derrickson, who rang up Jason Blum, and they were like, yeah, this is such a good idea, we have to make it right now before somebody else does.
I mean, The Ring is very scary.
So that started the collaboration between Cargill and Derrickson, which also formed into the Marvel Cinematic Universe for Doctor Strange. And they were going to do the sequel, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. But in early 2020, they departed from Marvel Studios and Disney due to creative differences. And because they were able to leave that project, Derrickson was able to make his passion project, which was The Black Phone, which is an adaptation of a short story from the book 20th Century Ghosts, written by Joe Hill.
And who is Joe Hill? Stephen King's son.
Yes, I had no idea that he had a son who was a prolific writer in horror as well. He also wrote the novel Horns, which had the Daniel Radcliffe film adaptation about 10 years ago. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so I had no idea that he was someone who was quite prolific and was getting frequent adaptations of his work done. So you can get 20th Century Ghosts on like audiobook and ebook and paperback and everything, but now they're doing current editions of the book, which is The Black Phone and Other Stories by Joe Hill.
Oh, nice.
Whereas The Black Phone was, it's kind of like a buried chapter in the book. It's a 30-page short story, about 7,000 words. And this film sticks really closely to the format of the short story. There are some changes which I'll talk about as we go along through this episode. But yeah, really faithful adaptation of the short story. And this film was put together, pre-production predominantly, during the first stage of lockdown of the pandemic in 2020. The actors, many of them, the child actors, had to do their auditions and their screen tests via Zoom. And shortly after lockdown started lifting in America, production started towards the end of 2020. The film had such a successful run in the festival circuit and the indie horror circuit that they decided we're going to give this a much bigger marketing, bigger release in summer of 2022. And that's how we find ourselves here. Now, before I got into The Black Phone, I'd never seen a trailer. I only saw the poster. I knew Ethan Hawke was in it. And that was it. And I was really happy that I had that blind approach to it.
Yeah, so I saw a trailer. But to be honest, what I saw, it didn't have much in it. It must have been one of the very first trailers because I literally saw Ethan Hawke in the mask and that was it.
Mm.
And, like, maybe some balloons? I can't remember.
Mm, yeah, because of the limited locations and the pretty small cast, I don't imagine this being something you can really dive into in like a 1 minute trailer. There's a lot of elements and a lot of stylistic choices in the
but
film.
But that was so exciting, not knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I didn't know where it was going to go.
Yeah.
I knew from like film Twitter that it was going to be really good. But other than that, I had no idea what was going to happen.
Yeah. So I think what we'll do is because this is opening weekend at time of recording this is a current horror film. We'll talk about it, general thoughts, spoiler-free, and then we'll timestamp spoilers towards the end of the episode for those who have seen it and want to hear our thoughts on the ending and the directions that it goes in. So we'll do non-spoilers and then spoilers. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Okay, let's dive into The Black Phone.
Snow. The flyer.
The papers call him the Grabber.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
You don't actually believe that story, do you? Because he can't hear you, and he doesn't really take kids that safe.
Oh! You goof. Well, isn't that just peachy keen?
You need some help?
You see that?
Here.
Would you hand me my hat?
Yes, sir.
I am a part-time magician.
Are those black balloons in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
So The Black Phone takes place in the late 1970s, and many children in this small... Where is Denver? Let's do my geography.
Colorado.
Where's Colorado on the
map?
No,
Colorado is Denver. I don't know.
So, Midwestern. We'll say, yeah.
Is it in Colorado? Is Colorado in Denver?
It is in Colorado. Colorado is the state, and Denver is the capital of Colorado.
Oh, yeah!
That geography GCSE is really paying dividends. But many kids in this Denver suburb are going missing, being abducted by someone who the press have nicknamed the Grabber. And we meet our main character, Finney, played by Mason Thames, who has got a younger sister, is in an abusive household, and gets beat up by bullies at school. Basically, he's not having a good time.
His life is pretty shit.
Yeah, he's not having a good time of it. Even though he's got a good relationship with his sister.
The dynamic between them two is so cute.
Yeah, the sister's kick-ass as well.
Yeah, she's ace.
So the sister is Gwen, played by Madeline McGraw. And he's also friends with Robin, played by Miguel Cazares-Mora, who is this ass-kicking little kid who beats up bullies, who bandages his hands with tape because there's too much blood on his knuckles, and looks out for Finney from the bullies.
I mean, chat shit, get banged.
Exactly. And he's also got good taste in films. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
He has, yes.
Yeah, Bruce Lee. Kid's got good taste in films. So yeah, this is clearly a period piece, in not just in the setting, but just how, like, stylized as well. I really got the sense you have Stephen King inspirations, of course. It is Joe Hill. But also things like, there's a scene where a kid is cycling down the street where it's pouring rain. They're in a yellow Macintosh. That felt very, you know, it. Because you never see Macintoshes in any other context, I think. And it's very similar to Sinister in how it uses, like, film reels for flashbacks or really grainy film stock as well. I think this is done on 8mm film.
I thought the styling of this film was amazing. Mm. Like, I really felt like I was in the 70s.
Yeah.
It was so good. Everything felt really immersive and everything looked as if it was 70s. And not just, like, stylized 70s. Like, you could imagine these kids being in the 70s. Mm. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they felt like, you know, down, like, really down to earth, like a tight knit community, because all the kids know each other. And, you know, there's no cell phones or social media or anything. They know each other well because they go to the same schools, they live on the same streets and everything. There is a sense of community there that is in person, that is face to face. So Finney finds himself the latest victim of the Grabber. And the Grabber is played by Ethan Hawke, and we never see his full face at the same time, because he's got this mask where he can take the top half of it off so we see his eyes, takes the bottom half of it off so we can see his mouth, but never at the same time. And he is a part-time clown or part-time entertainer, or that's how he pictures himself.
Well, he says he's a magician.
Yeah.
But I would say that's probably a ruse.
Yeah, he's driving a black van around with abracadabra written on the side, because that's a business you'd definitely hire for your kids' parties. He tricks Finney into helping him as he drops some stuff on the street, and then he maces him. He sprays something in his mouth. In the short story, it's wasp spray, which knocks him out. And Finney finds himself waking up in a basement with a single window. At the top of the wall, he's got a toilet and he has got a mattress in the middle of the room, and also on the wall a black phone, which is disconnected, but he swears he hears it ringing. And this is where we spend the majority of the film.
Yeah, so his ruse is very Ted Bundy inspired. I mean, the 70s was prolific for serial killers in America. You've got them all around in the 70s, Jesus Christ. But yeah, he would, like, with a broken arm, get girls
play sympathy
to help him out. So it's a very well-known serial killer tactic.
So there's a lot that really, really works in Black Phone, but I think we need to have a minute of appreciation for Ethan Hawke as the Grabber.
Oh, my God, he's terrifying. Mm. He is so fucking creepy.
And he was reluctant to take the role at first because he didn't want to be, you know, he didn't want to be remembered for villain roles at this stage in his career. But then he realised, wait, I'm like in my 50s. Maybe villains are the future of my career now. and because he's wearing a mask as well, you are able to sort of maybe disassociate him from it. Like, it's something I don't think he's going to be typecast for, but he's still a really creepy presence. Even just like his hunched posture when he's walking through the door into the basement, and the silhouette he has as well, really striking.
There's a creepy, it's not gentleness, but there's a creepy softness to his voice and to his mannerisms, which doesn't match up with his personality.
Yeah.
It's like he's almost putting it on to lure somebody with a false sense of security.
Mm.
And it works so well. Whether that was the intention or not, I don't know.
Mm.
But it works so well that it makes you feel uneasy, because this person, you know, this person is not a soft person.
Yeah, yeah. It almost, if he'd taken it any further, it could have almost come across as like flamboyant, but it doesn't. It's still like it looks like when he's got the top half of his mask off, it looks like he's almost always on the verge of tears. Like that, like his eyes are always like wet.
You can see there's a very damaged backstory to him.
Mm.
Like other things that make that a bit clearer in the film.
Mm.
But yeah, it's very strange that he's got such a haunting presence, but then juxtaposed with this almost calmness, then he switches, like it's realistic.
Yeah, I think he does want to be perceived as like a really tough, creepy, like serial killer type. He wants to scare the kids, but that I don't think he's got the willpower to really follow through on it, at least at the beginning of the film. Because he says he sneaks into the basement while Finney's asleep and says, I just wanted to look at you. And then once Finney snaps back at him, like, that's really creepy, he kind of breaks character and then immediately leaves the basement. Like, he's someone who I think really wants to be really powerful and strong, but he's just not able to do it. That's the vibe I got from him.
It doesn't work. Hang it up. I made you some breakfast.
What'd you put in that?
Salt and pepper.
And if you read the short story from 20th Century Ghost, you wouldn't imagine Ethan Hawke in this role at all. He's like a bald, incredibly fat person. Like the first page of the book is just describing how grotesquely fat this guy is. It's almost like kind of borders on fat phobic to an extent. But like that's the complete opposite of Ethan Hawke. Like a much smaller frame, really long hair. Like they've really gone with a big creative difference from the actual short story. Even if the story itself is really faithful, the depiction of Al, as he's known in the book, is very different.
I think that works, though, to the film's advantage, because I think the theme of being weak and being bullied, like, and trying to stand up for yourself and kind of stuff is a big thing throughout the film. And I think that even with the villain antagonist character, like, I think the reason, like you say, he wants to feel powerful, maybe, like, that comes from being bullied. But also, he targets children who are way easier to bully and to do incredibly awful things to. You know, they're not going to... You say this, and they're not going to put up as much of a fight as an adult.
Yeah, which is why he's so taken aback by Finny at first, because while I'm sure the other kids he's taken did fight back, we never see their abductions. Finny is very much the point of view character for the most part. So we see his abduction, but the rest is left ambiguous or off screen. But Finny has got a torch, a spaceship torch with him, which he uses to almost like slice open the grabber's arm when he first gets him into the back of the van. And because of that, like, initial act of aggression, the grabber doesn't really know what to do with him at first. At least that was the vibe I got. Like, he's like gashed open my arm. This one's a fighter. I don't know how to approach this yet. But what you were saying about it being almost like an abuser situation, yeah, I think that's really explicit, where the grabber will say, like, look what you made me do. Like, you made me do this. It is abuser language. And that is juxtaposed with what Finny has to deal with at home at the beginning of the film, where he's in an abusive relationship with his father, and his father's abusive to both him and the sister. And it's pretty harrowing stuff as well. I don't think it's a coincidence that the grabber's mask, the bottom half of his face, bears a very striking similarity to Finny's dad's beard, like perfectly shaped at the bottom of his face. That could be me really looking into it, but it's such a deliberate, like, it's not a generic mask. This is something I think was designed very thoughtfully for this film. That was the impression I got.
Yeah, I mean, the opening scenes are, wow. I would say if you have a traumatic background, just be prepared for that scene.
Yeah. 'Cause the film's rated 15. We don't see much of like the impact of stuff, but the actors are so convincing. It's shot really carefully, that the brutality is on display, even though you don't see that much. It's what we say, the horrors, the monsters in film aren't as scary as the monsters in real life. And the Black Phone, really, even though there are supernatural elements to the film, the grounded nature of that really struck a chord.
Yeah, it is quite re-traumatizing. So just say, be careful with that. I wasn't quite prepared for how harrowing it was going to be and how realistic it was. And wow, the acting is absolutely amazing. And I did nearly want to get up and walk out. I'm glad I stayed with the film, but I was, it was really tough to get through.
Yeah, so something that weren't quite prepared for. And part of why it's so effective in the context of the film is Madeleine McGraw's performance as the kick-ass, like, younger daughter.
God.
Yeah, like, she's going places.
Wow, yeah. Incredible acting from her. Her crying and her screams are just so haunting and realistic. Yeah, it should, like, yeah, just a massive trigger warning for that part. It was really tough to get through, and I did actually cry watching those scenes.
And at the same time, though, we've got Gwen, who, while at home as a victim, while she's at school, defends the older brother, and takes a rock to one of the bullies as well. Like, she don't take no shit.
But that's the thing, you can be both things.
But I mean, like, performance-wise, it's really convincing. It just shows that this is a really textured character.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like, and she makes, as a performance, as a child actor, both are convincing, both are credible, and I think she's a real standout character in the film.
You know what? I think the acting from everybody in this film is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you really feel like you are in that movie with them.
Mm.
Like, there was a few times I remember grabbing your hand and being like, oh my God, like, this is so tense. Yes. Like,
We'll talk more specifics in the spoiler section. But yeah, there was, I saw you peering through your hands. Even towards the end when things might have been
I was waiting for the last thing to be really bad. I was like, oh my God.
No, the first film, Sinister, did have like a studio mandated like jump scare ending. And I think that because they've done so well as a team, they were allowed more free reign. So the ending is substantially different than what you'd expect from something like Sinister. I got the sense that this was their story and they got to tell it how they wanted to, through the methods and through the casting choices that they wanted to stick with. And it's all the better for it. So this feels like a really fresh film.
Yeah, I really liked the ending. I'm glad it ended the way it did. We'll talk a bit more about that later on.
Yeah. So yeah, there's really good moments of humour as well, involving the grabber's brother who is upstairs. It's, goodness knows, like, we thought we knew what was going to happen at the end with the brother. And then something, yeah, we'll get into the spoiler stuff, but it was really, really playing with our emotions there. He's also just really funny. Like, he's James Ranson, who was in the Sinister films as well, so he's come back for these as well. We've got the detectives who interview Gwen at school, and Gwen just swears at them.
Her little fighter monologue is hilarious. With these two detectives, and do you know what, I think they actually respect her a little bit for it.
Oh yeah, they do. They're like, if your teacher wasn't here, I'd like fist bump you right now. I think you've done really well, kid. You've got fighting spirit. But the main supernatural element of the film, which is actually kind of almost like a last minute twist in the short story, it's not really introduced until like the last five pages, is the ambiguity of the black phone in the basement, and that Finney hears it ringing even though it's disconnected, and the grabber claims he can hear it, but he's not quite sure. It's maybe something in his head. But Finney is able to use the black phone to speak to the grabber's previous victims, who know what's going to happen, who have forgotten their names, though. Their names, they say, are the first thing that goes. Yeah, but they've left remnants of their previous escape attempts and are trying to communicate to Finney how best to get out of this situation, how not to get killed too soon by the grabber. And basically, they are able to use this this connection through the phone to plot a course out. And the way it was communicated as well, like, in the short story, it's only like the last five or six pages that he speaks to kids on the phone, and it's just the one kid, whereas here it's the main conceit of the film, and visually how it's shown as well, how kids will be like hiding in the corner and like speaking or lip syncing through the phone conversation. Some really creepy supernatural horror imagery there as well. The performances are great. I think it's shot really well. Yeah, I thought it was a great way to get the premise of the short story on screen and enhance it.
Yeah, I think it was a great film. And these scenes were amazing. And I loved that we could take something so awful and use it for good. Like, they work as a team, they help each other out, you know what I mean? These kids want to see Finny win because they didn't.
Yeah.
And everything else kind of like fades away.
Mm.
And I remember like one of the characters, Finny, saying, like, I think it's important that they've chosen strong people that Finny sees are strong people to be the victims first, because it just proves it doesn't matter what kind of, whether you're perceived as strong or not, like something like this makes everybody the same. Everybody is vulnerable because you're dealing with a monster. Well, a human monster. But like, do you know what I mean? I think it was a very important choice to make sure it was people he thought were quite scary or really popular or, you know, strong and can fight because he feels like he hasn't got a chance.
Yeah, like, because one of the people who gets taken is Robin. And when there's the possibility, he thinks, oh, I could maybe climb up to the window and escape. He thinks, no, because, like, obviously, whoever was here before me would have thought of that. Robin would definitely have reached that window, and look what happened to him. Let's save my energy for something else. Like Finny's a smart kid, and he's using that those like powers of deduction to figure out, like, because this is such a tight-knit community. You see all the missing persons posters over the span of like several months at the beginning of the film. He knows these kids who have gone missing. He knows how strong they were, and he knows that, you know, if there was a way out of here, they would have found it by now. And it turns out, as a collective, maybe they did. And they communicate it through the phone.
It just shows that no matter how strong or scary you see somebody, like, we all basically are the same. And, like, it's not about whether you can fight or not. It's just honestly, like, not in your hands when it comes to something like that. And I think it was important for him, like, to see that. And, like, you know, that's how it is in real life. Like, unfortunately, a lot of it can come down to luck.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's important to show, like, Finny saw these people as strong people, and, you know, like, you know, bad things don't happen to strong people, but they do. And at the end of the day, they're still kids, and this is an adult waging a war on children. So, you know, and yeah, I think it was an important lesson for him.
Yeah, that because of the power dynamic for people his age, it's an equalizer, basically, this situation. I think that's a really good, like, interesting way to approach it.
Yeah, I think there's so many little details like that, and which is why it makes it such a well-rounded film and so good. There's just little things like that throughout it all. And I think it's interesting that the kind of person that kind of sort of saves the day, as it were, is the youngest person in the film. Like, that says something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I think so. And it's also because they... Yeah, it just ties back to that sense of community as well.
Yeah, there's not too much we can say without spoiling things for you, just because it's such a complex story.
Yeah, but anything in terms of, like, general thoughts before we get into spoilers, would you recommend The Black Phone?
Oh, definitely. I want to see it again, like, almost straight away. Yeah, it's so good. We literally came out of the cinema, like, a couple of hours ago, and then decided to come record about it because it was just such an exciting, thrilling film.
Yeah, it's not a full-blown horror, even though it does have some supernatural elements to it. It is, like, it's cross-genre, like, thriller, crime, horror.
Yeah, but I think the subject matter is probably really horror.
Yeah, I'd agree. I still think that it's not... if you are a gore hound or after something like a conventional slasher, or even something more akin to, like, Stephen King's It, you're not really going to get it, but you are going to get something substantial and really interesting in its place. It's not like it's compromising.
Yeah, there is some really good effects, though, in this, which are quite horrifying in itself. There's quite a few jump scares.
Oh, that's something I wanted to mention earlier, like, with the 1970s like aesthetic. It looks like a lot of this was filmed in camera, like the special effects or some of the scares. It does feel like, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of digital trickery going on. This does feel like a film that could have been made, maybe with a lot more difficulty, in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
Like there's no, like, there are a couple of, like, ambitious moments and effects, but something that I think with enough prep and with enough resources in the 70s could have been done at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it feels like a really good time capsule film of something that was made in the 70s or the 80s but was released today. But, yeah, I think The Black Phone is really, really good. I don't know if I would rate it higher than Sinister, but that's a really high bar, and they're very different films. But it's still the same creative voice, and I really like that.
I haven't seen Sinister for a while, so I would pick this over that, just because I like, this is the most recent, and I've really, really enjoyed it, and I want to see it again.
Yeah.
But maybe if I saw Sinister again, I don't know. I just remember not being totally scared with Sinister.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's creepy. And it is a good watch. But after hearing you say how scared you were, I think I was more scared at this one. I think this was more tense for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think possibly things that have a more realistic situation in them, for me personally, make me more scared than, say, what happens in the Sinister.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, in Sinister, you're going to get weird, creepy supernatural, like, bagul things. Whereas in this one, like, the inspiration she said earlier, people like Ted Bundy. Like, it's more based in reality.
Yeah.
And that can make it even more creepy.
Yeah, for me personally, it does, yeah.
So, yeah, we recommend The Black Phone, but I think it's time to, you know, to pick up that ringing phone in the background, Yaz, and go for spoilers.
Hello?
Don't hang up.
Who are you?
You know all our names?
You're getting out of here.
Please! Please let the dreams be real.
See the wall in front of you? I tore a long cable loose from down there.
There's a combination lock on the inside of the storm door.
What's the combination?
I carved it in the wall.
Hang up the phone!
Ring, ring. Oh, spoilers are ringing
the
again.
Spoilers have arrived.
Oh, spoilers are here. So the scene I really, really want to talk about, I think it's the same one that you want to talk about as well, is the scene when he's spoken to one of the kids on the phone with a combination for a lock that the grabber has locked the front door of the house with a bike lock that the grabber stole from the kid once they killed them. And the kid remembers 5 or 6 numbers from it, but doesn't know the order. Doesn't know the order of the combination, so...
But scratched them down into the wall.
So they wouldn't forget.
So they wouldn't forget.
Yes. But because it's, like, 5 numbers, is it, like, a bunch of 2-digit numbers? Is it a 1-digit? Is it 23 or is it 2-3? And the kid's like, I don't remember. You're going to have to try all of them. But the grabber upstairs has passed out because he's not slept. So you're able to... You got to go upstairs and sneak past him. Because the grabber leaves the metal door to the basement shut, but doesn't lock it, hoping the kid comes upstairs so he's got a reason to beat them.
Yeah.
Which is really creepy.
It's a game called Naughty Boy.
Mm.
And it's a sadistic, disgusting, vile game that he's enjoying.
And there's the really creepy shot where the first time we see him at the top of the stairs sat in the kitchen, which is so haunting.
Yeah.
With the mask as well.
Just like, sat there.
With his shirt unbuttoned. Yeah.
With no shirt on. Just sat there. No shirt on a stool.
Holding a belt.
Holding his belt.
Mm.
Just waiting.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it is scary.
Yeah, it's really creepy. And it's such a... Like, it's so subtle. Like, it's such an... He's just sat in the middle of the kitchen, but really clever costume choices and great camera work, and the way how how Scott Derrickson really plays with the perspective, like, who, like, very thoughtful and deliberate choices as to how much the audience is allowed to know and how much Finney knows as well, and how those contrast with each other over the course of the film. It really keeps you on the edge of your seat. So he goes upstairs because the grabber has passed out because he's not been sleeping. So he's out cold in the kitchen. He's sat down with the mask on. And because he goes into the kitchen, because of the lighting, you can't see through the eye holes. So he just looks like he's sat in the chair, even though he's asleep. So really great lighting. And he has to try and sneak out. And it's so freaky. You're waiting for him to wake up.
It is so tense. I just remember squeezing your hand at this point, like, oh my god. And then looking at you, and we're both pulling the same kind of face, like, oh my god, is he gonna do it?
Yeah, it's such a great set piece. Because you're in the spoiler section. He does manage to get out in the end, but the dog that he's got upstairs barks when the front door opens. Grabber wakes up, is able to get him back inside the house, but my god, was it like a really, really stressful, like, like second act moment. Really, really great.
Yeah, it was really good.
And there's sort of two plots happening with the black phone at the same time. You've got Finney, of course, in the basement talking to what we can assume is the spirit of these kids who are trying to help him escape from the grabber. But you've also got Finney's sister, Gwen, who was trying to help with the police operation to find the grabber. And she seems to be having dreams or, like, some prophecies, some visions. And Gwen is worried that she's going to end up like her mother, who had similar visions and died via suicide. And Gwen, in her room, she opens up her dollhouse and takes out some religious artifacts. And she prays to Jesus, hoping for dreams. And whenever she doesn't have a dream, she opens up the dollhouse in the morning and is like, Jesus, what the fuck? Like, I meant to be having dreams.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Like, at night, she's like, oh, Jesus, you know, I know you're already going to, you already know what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask it anyway. And I'm like, oh, please, can I have dreams to help my brother? Wakes up like, what the fuck, Jesus? Come on, I thought we had a deal.
Yeah. Like, it's I think it's like another theme running throughout of like faith and losing faith, and, you know, is it really there? Like, she says, you know, like, she'll do anything if you give her a dream. Like, she'll start believing you and she'll follow you forever, Jesus, if you help her. Yeah, like, kind of thing. So
like, she's bargaining.
Yeah, so it's like a you know, a theme dealing with religion. Like, do you believe it, do you not? Because at one point she starts questioning her own faith and ability, because she doesn't have these dreams.
It was like, because me and you, we're not religious people, but however, I'm certain at some point in our lives we've prayed at some point, because we either wanted something really, really badly or we're desperate or something. I've prayed, like, when I was young, even though I don't believe in God. Just on the off chance that, you know.
Just on the off chance that it might be real.
Yeah, you know, God might, you know, do me a solid favour and get me a good exam result or something.
Or if you're in a scary situation and you're like, and you're starting like, please let us be okay. Please let us be okay.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing. I do that quite a lot. Please let us be okay. Please let us be okay.
Yeah, like, even if you're not religious or if you're agnostic.
I don't think I've ever necessarily prayed to God or Jesus, but I've definitely spoken to the universe or whatever's out there. Like,
yeah. Like, yeah.
If there is anything out there.
Yeah, I think if the situation is dire enough, you can call to a higher power just on the off chance that it might work.
Yeah.
And I think that Gwen's maybe a bit more sincere, but there's still a sort of like back and forth. Like, she sees it as more of a moral exchange. Like, you know, if you help me save my brother, I will follow you forever.
Yeah.
which I thought was really funny. And because of the stress of losing her brother, she's not able to sleep at home. She winds up sleeping and napping at school. She has visions of this house with a single tree out front with no leaves on it, and the number of the house, try and lead the police there. And we thought, I think we had the thought at the same time, that there was going to be some sort of bait and switch with who would wind up getting caught, or who the police would apprehend as the grabber, or who Finney would fight back against, because the grabber's got his brother in the house as well, who doesn't know what's going on.
Yes. However, I did say to you very early in the film, because there was a little Easter egg given to us.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
What we got?
Well, when he's talking, when they interview him first to find out what's going on, about if he knows anything about
About the missing kids.
About the missing kids and the grabber. You hear a dog bark.
Mm-hmm.
You hear him talk about his brother a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know he's investigating it. And I said to you, it's going to be his brother.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But
like, they dropped little Easter eggs for us within that, so it was obvious.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the film, when Finny and the Grabber are having their first exchange in the... when Finny and the Grabber are having one of their first exchanges in the basement, the Grabber's like, oh, I can't bring you food right now. I'll bring it to you later. And Finny's like, why bring me down here if you're not going to feed me? It's like, is somebody going to see you take the food and start asking questions? And the Grabber's like, shit, he's got me.
Yeah, see, so there was little things even in there. Like, but yeah, we did both have the same thought of, oh my God, is he going to kill the brother?
Yes, because Finny, motivated by a phone call from Robin, decides he's going to fight back because today is the day that he's going to be killed. So he disconnects the black phone from the... what would you call it? The receiver on the wall. And stuffs it full of dirt because he's also been digging a hole as well, which was a piece of advice given to him by another one of the kids. Stuffs the phone with dirt to make it heavier. And there's a really lovely scene when Robin is teaching Finny to fight with the phone.
Yeah.
And they're like mirroring each other, even though contextually Finny can't physically see him, but we as the audience can see he's there. Really, really nice scene. Really good. And the brother upstairs, really curious about what his family member's been up to, goes downstairs to the basement.
Well, he's been investigating it, hasn't he? And he wants to be part of the investigation.
Yes, he's got a big wall chart.
Yes, and he's pinpointed where it could be. And then he suddenly realises, oh shit.
Mm-hmm. This is a prime location where the killer could be. So yeah, he looks in the basement and the door opens. But thankfully, because we thought that maybe Finny would like rush him and kill the brother. But he's like, oh God, oh, it's you. Oh, you have no idea what it took to figure out that you were here. And then the grabber appears from behind the brother, axes him in the back of the head. He's dead.
But we can see this happening through Finny.
Yes.
Because he's going, oh God. Or, oh no, or something. Or mm-hmm. He says something, doesn't he?
Yeah, like, he says, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, oh no, yeah. Oh no, oh no. And then...
Yeah. Now, this happens in the short story, basically beat for beat. Like, almost like verbatim in terms of the dialogue as well. The grabber kills his brother, and he's like, well, look what you made me do. You made me kill my brother. Like, once again, the abuser language is there as well. And Finny's able to fight back using almost like Home Alone style traps in the basement with the hole he's been digging.
So everything the previous kids have taught him has all worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all come together. And the grabber's trapped in the hole, breaks his ankle, can't get out. And Finny just beats him with the phone as he's like trapped in the hole, wraps the cord around his neck, breaks his neck. There's the really cool action line of, oh, the phone that's ringing, that's it's for you.
Which, oh, that's so good.
That's how the short story ends. It's for you. End story. That's it.
Oh, but I think it's good that we see a bit more in the film.
It's cool. But there's more closure in the film as well, and all the subplots. In the short story, I really liked how they draw... in the short story, Finny mentions that he's got a sister who is really superstitious, who reads tarot cards and stuff, and he imagines maybe she's having visions about where he is. But we never leave Finny's perspective in the short story. It's a really truncated version of the film, but it's really, really faithful. And he manages to escape. The grabber brought the dog down, but because he was able to get into the freezer through digging through the wall, he's got some raw meat to lure the dog away, all comes together, and he's able to leave. And the house that Gwen saw in her visions was across the road, which is where the bodies of the kids have been buried in the basement. So, yeah. And then they embrace at the end outside the house. It's a very happy ending. Well, I say very happy, but...
No, it's a very...
Bittersweet.
It's a bit of relief.
Mm.
But I was worried that something bad was going to happen. Yeah. I was like, oh no, it's luring me. But it wasn't. It was nice to have an ending that was, not extremely traumatic.
Yeah, I thought there was only one of two ways it was going to end. He was either going to escape the way he did, or he was going to die in the basement and be
once again in the phone helping the next kid, because he's got that torch, which is the shape of a spaceship, which he used as a weapon. And he leaves that at the top of the black phone. So maybe I thought he'd leave that under the mattress or something so that the next kid who is in the basement has a weapon and then that kid can get out.
Yeah, I thought that perhaps he was already dead.
Oh.
And that the sister's embracing a ghost, and then we find out it's a ghost when she embraces him. But thankfully that didn't happen.
Well, that could have made sense though, because the grabber's got like a devil mask with horns and everything. Oh, that could have been a really cool twist. Scott Derrickson, you missed a trick there, mate. Better get back to the drawing board.
No, I like the ending. It was good. We needed though a bit of light relief.
And Finney comes back to school. He seems to be really popular because there's rumours about him killing the grabber and how he did it. And he gets the courage to sit next to his crush in science class.
Well, they were partnered up anyway.
I know, but he actually goes over to sit next to her, whereas earlier he didn't have the courage to do that. So, you know, as usual, murder solves everything. Self-defence solves everything.
We had a really funny experience at the cinema, though.
Yeah.
As we were leaving, there was a bunch of young teenage of girls. Yeah. They must have been 15, like, to be able to get in the film.
Yeah.
I don't think they were much older than that.
Mm.
And I could hear them discussing the film, and it was very funny.
Yeah.
And at one point, one of the girls went, "Why was she hitting on him when he's just, like, got escaped or something like that? Why would you do that?"
To be fair,
I can't remember what it was that she said, but it was really funny. It just made me laugh.
I think that's quite realistic, though. It would make you quite... I think it would kind of make you really popular for a short time, at least. Like, oh, you survived a serial killer.
No, her point is, like, why are you doing that? Like, he's just escaped or something, or, like... Why are you hitting on somebody? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, straight away. I thought it was really funny. I can't remember what her point was anymore, but it was really funny.
But they had a really good reaction to it. I remember walking past them on the way out the cinema. They were all, like, huddled together going, "Oh, my God, that was so good." Like, it was a really good reaction.
And didn't you hear them talking about how he was sat there with his top off or something?
Oh, yeah. I passed them on the way in and out of the toilet, and they were like, "Oh, that scene where he had his shirt on off." Really. Because I think that is, like, the standout horror set piece. But there are still some really good jump scares when the five kids appear in the street while she's riding the...
Hell.
Oh, we both, like...
Yeah, we both jumped a mile in the air, I think, at that one.
It's a shame because the cinema we went to has recently been refurbished, and I'm worried that because ruined the new seats. Like, that was a proper jump. But it was a similar jump to the one that really gets me in Sinister as well. Like, because it is such, like, more subdued horror, lots of in-camera stuff and very few jump scares... When they do happen, they really hit you.
Yeah, it's good. I think I jumped a couple of times, but they were all really, like,
Yeah, and even how the kids appear to Finney in the basement as well. Even though they are there to help him, they are framed, like, really ambiguously. Like,
oh my God, the first kid made me shit myself. Mm. Like, I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
I think I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because they've got all their wounds and everything from how they were killed and how they were buried. And one kid is, like, floating in the corner.
That's like, upside down. Yeah. Like, in the crab.
Mm.
Think Exorcist crab.
Yeah.
But floating.
Yes. And then they like, point to the phone and they're trying to, like, guide him across
the room.
Well,
you hear this dripping.
Mm.
And I thought it was going to be water or something that we find. Yeah. Like, oh no.
But it's a dripping.
It's blood.
Yeah, dripping blood.
Dripping corpse.
Yeah, but it's stuff like that, which is what I was saying earlier about. I think a lot of this, it looks like it was all done in camera. Very few digital effects. So it feels authentic to the time period that the film's set in.
Or it's a really good blend of the two.
Mm. There's the flashback when we meet one of the victims and Finney's encounter with him in an arcade. Someone called Vance, who was going to get a high score on a pinball table. Somebody knocks him. He's about to get the high score, ruins his game, and then he just beats the crap out of him and, like, carves into his arm.
Yeah, but I mean, one of them did produce a knife.
But that's why Finney was as scared of this kid. But that's framed as he's being escorted out of the police station, like a 8mm film. It's a box aspect ratio. They use a different grain. It does have the hallmarks of like Sinister. Like, or if you make something look way older, it becomes more authentic, I guess. Which is,
but it works.
It does work, and I think it's why maybe Robin draws attention to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, something that was filmed in such a grounded and realistic way when it came out. It's why it made such a big impact. And they mentioned drive-thru theaters as well at the beginning of the film. Yeah, it wears its inspiration on its sleeve, and I like that. One reason I really liked to see Robert Cargill when I was first hearing about him on Spill.com, like 10, 15 years ago, was like, he clearly loves, adores horror. Like, I always loved listening and watching his horror film reviews, like back in the day before he became a screenwriter. And he's in his element here as a co-writer with Scott Derrickson.
Yeah, it's a great pairing.
And they're doing a Deus Ex movie. We're based off the video game, which has been in production hell for like 7 or 8 years, but that's their next big project together. Like I said, I went into this film blind, but I'd seen the posters, like that great mask, which is designed by Tom Savini.
A horror legend in himself.
Yes. And I know that every mask feels like, oh, this is the next iconic horror mask, but
you could see this in the future being like, if they made like a series of this.
I agree. But it's funny you say about it maybe being a series, because if this film does well, there's talks of maybe there being a sequel, but I don't really know how you'd continue this story.
Yeah, just as I said that, I just kind of was like, hang on, no, how's that going to happen?
Yeah.
With the way, and actually, maybe it could just stay contained as the one film.
However, Joe Hill has apparently pitched Scott Derrickson a, quote, wonderful idea for a sequel to Black Phone. So if the film's successful, who knows what will happen?
Well, I mean, there are copycat killers, so you never know.
Or maybe they adapt something else from the book 20th Century Ghosts and maybe have the grabber or the mask or something else as like a visual through line. Maybe.
Yeah.
The possibilities are endless when you deal with short stories, I guess.
Met Tom Savini.
Oh, have you? Yes, we have, haven't we? I remember that was... When was that? That was ages ago.
It was the same day we met Gunnar Hansen.
Oh, yeah. So I always remember that one. That was 2015?
I don't know.
Maybe.
It was a long time ago.
But yeah, you've got some of his books.
I have?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The tree, the door, the gate. I'd never seen it before except in my dream.
You don't have much time.
You're gonna use a weapon. You raise the phone, step back, and swing.
Look what you made me do.
Please hurry.
You remember what I told you?
That someday I should stand up for myself.
Someday is today, Finn.
So, Yaz, any final thoughts on The Black Phone?
I just really want to see it again. It was so good.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's going to reward repeat viewings because of, almost Edgar Wright levels of setup and payoff. And
I think we're going to discover more little Easter eggs as you go through.
Mm.
It'll make sense, like little things, now that you can go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
But I really want to go back and rewatch it again. So.
I want to learn more about how it was put together. It's one of those things where I want to know, like, I want to like watch Ethan Hawke interviews about like how he went about portraying the character. I want to see like behind the scenes how they did certain effects, and I want to dive more into it. And not every film is able to elicit that response, but this one really did.
Yeah, it's I would definitely go check it out. Like you say, it's not like horror as you know it, it's like a thriller horror.
But clearly a crowd pleaser, if our audience was any indication.
Like
I saw people who were sat just a couple of seats further up from you, and when the jump scares happened, I saw them turning to each other going, oh god.
Yeah, like, everybody was
with the relief
kind
and
of jumping.
Yeah,
I was like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Every time.
Yeah, like I think there's been a couple of really good horror films to come out since movie theaters opened. Like we saw Scream back in January
and Candyman,
but this feels like another one where, maybe don't wait for it to come out on home media before you see it.
Yeah, definitely try and see it in the screen.
Yeah, if you are seeing it, if you are able to see it, try and see it on a big screen with a crowd. If you're able to do that, or if that's an environment you're comfortable with seeing it in. But yeah, this does feel like a good big screen return to form for horror again. And really good film.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be good. I'd heard good things.
Mm.
But I'm surprised at how good it was. Mm. Not surprised. It's lived up to its expectation.
Yeah.
Let's say that, yeah.
I need to see more films without, like, knowing anything about them.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Because I
mean, we saw the trailer for Nope, and I have absolutely no idea what's going on in that either. Mm. So that looks kind of fun to just kind of watch.
Yeah, Nope looks good. That comes out in August, I think. So, yeah, that's one to look out for. But yeah, just knowing the poster and the title and that it had Ethan Hawke in it, that was literally all I knew. And I was really, really excited to go along with the journey of the film, having the supernatural elements like unravel as it went along and not knowing anything about it.
Yeah, weirdly, I thought it was going to be a bit more like Black Christmas. I think I may have just got it... Or When a Stranger Calls.
Mm.
I think I may have just got it a bit... mixed up the fact that there's a phone in that film. Yeah.
Well, I thought it might have been something akin to like a parent has to track down their kids by cryptic phone conversations with Ethan Hawke or something. Like genuinely, that's what I thought it might have been. But no, it was something very different, and it surprised me in all the best ways.
Yeah, go check it out. Mm. It's good.
And you should also, while you're searching for films to check out, you should also check out our social media. Yeah, if you've got a black phone of your own that is connected to the internet, you can also subscribe to our podcast feed and rate us 5 stars or leave us a review, whatever you want to do.
I'll accept 4.
Yeah, well, we're not haggling, but we can...
I mean, I prefer 5, but yeah. I'll accept 4.
We'll pray to Jesus for 5-star reviews, okay? if we don't get them, we'll have some stern words in the morning. But where can they find us on social media, Yaz?
At Monster Mom Pod on Twitter. At Monster Monday Pod on Instagram. And our Facebook is the same as Instagram. You made me laugh then.
Because I knew, oh, is she going to get it? One second, let's find it.
I think I did it right this time.
There we go. There's our Twitter.
Yeah, I got it right.
Okay. Do you want to take it again, clean?
You can find us on Twitter at Monster Mom Pod, on Instagram at Monster Monday Pod, and Facebook is the same as Instagram.
Thank you for listening to our spoiler-free and spoiler-filled review of The Black Phone. Not sure what the next episode's going to be. But...
I think we might do something a little bit different for the next episode.
Yeah?
So stay tuned.
Ooh, I like the sound of that. Something
Wait
maybe
new. For the ringing of the black phone.
Oh, snap. Yes. My name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And you've been listening to the Monster Monday podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye. Hello, Will of the Monster Monday podcast speaking.
Sorry.
You right, Yaz? Because I'm doing the phone motion with my hands. Like I'm actually...
That's because you're Brazilian. Oh my god. It's because you're picking up an imaginary phone.
Yeah.
I'm speaking inside. Right, go again.
Okay. Hello, Will of the Monster Monday podcast speaking. Yes, you won't guess who it is. It's a grab bag of horror movies that we can pull out of a hat calling. Was that better? Thumbs up. Okay, good. Hey, thank you for calling. Do I need to call an ambulance now?
Honestly,
I'm showing Yaz the audio levels and how much she's peaking.
No, don't keep all of this in. Oh my god. It's so funny.
I don't want to hit stop. Okay. All right.